The Chicago Bears' loss to the New York Jets on Sunday sucked. It was kind of boring to watch. We knew it wasn't going to be any fun without Justin Fields out there. But even more important than the loss itself were the injuries the Bears suffered in this game that are probably going to have some longer-term effects on this team, at least for the rest of the season.
You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. You can hear that I'm still a little bit under the weather, but powering through today to try and get you some daily in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. You can follow me on Twitter at CoxSports1. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Bears. You can like Locked On Bears on Facebook. Join the Locked On Bears Facebook group for even more Bears talk. And make sure you hit that subscribe button on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel to keep up with all of our video podcasts as well. This one is not going to be on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel, a podcast exclusive for you, because I'm not about to be all sniffly and pausing to cough every 5 minutes on a YouTube video. Too much work. Too much energy. I can be a little bit more relaxed and put more of myself into it in this full podcast form and hopefully edit out as much of the gross flu and head cold noises that you don't want to have to hear. But on the show today, appreciate you tuning in and bearing with me as I do my best to power through. On the show today, we're going to talk about the results of this game. Not so much exactly the final score, the 31-10 and what happened. I mean, we'll get into a little bit with Trevor Siemian and how the offense functioned with him in it compared to Justin Fields, but also the impact of the injuries, headlining Darnell Mooney and Eddie Jackson, but also a couple of other minor players involved in that side of the game, and kind of talk a little bit about the ongoing battle with MetLife Stadium's turf or the artificial turf and some of the push for the injury concerns coming out as a result of that. The injury storylines for the Bears started before the game with the eyes on Justin Fields and whether or not he would be able to go. Certainly glad the Bears didn't try and force him out there and have him push through and risk re-injury. Sounds like Fields was pretty on board with that as well, given where he was. Don't need to spend much time on the pregame Trevor Siemian oblique injury that almost saw Nathan Peterman get the start. We talked about Nathan Peterman on last week's podcast. We had a commenter on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel say way too much talk about Peterman on that podcast, but I felt smart for about a half hour Sunday morning as we thought Peterman might start that game, but fortunately we were all spared that outcome because I think it would have been much worse than the 31-10 that we did see. All 10 of those points came in the first half when the Bears briefly had a lead, and there were moments in this game where the Siemian-led offense had a rhythm to it. It had some level of production and was moving the ball in a way that was, I'd say, a pleasant surprise. And as you might expect then, it produces takes about Justin Fields by comparison in this Bears offense. And I think it's important to take a second here to understand what was and wasn't different with Siemian in there and how that compares to what we saw from Justin Fields. Because, yeah, there was a point in this game, Siemian was like, 7 of 11 for 100 yards or whatever and a touchdown, and the offense was rolling a little bit. But I think we kind of saw the second half bear out how that's going to go for four quarters, where, yes, Siemian can at times have some stretches where he's keeping the offense moving. He's completing some passes and keeping things rolling, but his style of quarterbacking with a supporting cast like what the Bears have now is not sustainable for four quarters of high-level offensive output. That, early on, Siemian's had two of his completions were checkdowns to running backs that went for like 40 yards and 30 yards mostly after the catch, where Montgomery made a guy miss, and I believe Darrington Evans made a guy miss, and both guys ran away for significant gains far beyond what the quarterback did, which was just a very quick check down. It was a 33-yarder to Darrington Evans and a 26-yarder to David Montgomery, both in the first quarter. Those were two of his three longest passing plays that he did very little work on. And the other one, his other longest passing play, was a 31-yard 50-50 ball he threw down the right sideline to Chase Claypool, where Claypool went up and came down with the catch, and Simeon just gave him a shot at it. I mean, all three of those are throws Justin Fields is fully capable of making and has made before. The receivers just don't always do that much with it. Or you look at Simeon's touchdown pass to Byron Pringle. That pass was interceptable. That was an interceptable pass. It's what Pro Football Focus would grade as a turnover-worthy throw that went for a touchdown. It's a negatively graded throw, a poor throw by the quarterback that the wide receiver happens to pull away from a defensive player, and it goes as 6 points and a score for the quarterback on his passer rating, but not a good throw overall. And so the box score numbers for Simeon were a bit inflated based on what the quarterback play actually was. Now, what I will say, this is where the valid criticism is of Simeon in comparison to Justin Fields. Trevor Simeon gets the ball out a lot quicker. He's a quicker, more decisive passer. And that's just not something that Fields is. It's not his skill set, the sort of quick decision, 2 second and out passing plays. It was a slightly different offense in that regard, that Simeon was very much like one read to check down, whereas Fields is 1-2-3 check down or 1-2-3-4 check down. And so that helped the pass protection, for example, look a little bit better statistically because the ball was coming out more quickly. But when you isolate the plays where the offensive line had to pass protect for more than 2-2.5 seconds, they gave up pressure at the same rate as they did for Justin Fields. It was not a better offensive line. It was the quarterback making his offensive line look a little bit better, which is a valid criticism of Justin Fields, but not a reflection of Trevor Simeon being somehow some better passer or better for this Bears offense. Because as you saw, when your quarterback is limited to the quick passing and the check down, the opposing defense can collapse in on that a little bit better. And as you saw in the second half, it just wasn't there. So don't let people fool you with box score stats comparisons of Simeon's to Fields here, that Fields was putting up 30 points a game and Simeon's put up 10, albeit all in the first half, but couldn't do anything in that second half. And I think confirmed more of what we thought about Simeon, as opposed to any sort of issue here about Simeon being a better operator of the offense. He's a different style of quarterback, and it's easy for that style of quarterback to be inflated when your playmakers make a few plays for you. But when they stop doing all the work and it's on the quarterback to make something happen, it did not and is generally not very sustainable. Justin Fields, on the other hand, has the ability to do that, to be that difference maker at the quarterback position, not only with his legs, but with some of the throws that he's made with his arm. And so that's where you see the higher ceiling and where the passing production is not always a perfect representation or measurement of how Justin Fields performs as a passer. In the grand scheme of things, how Trevor Simeon performed in this game won't really have any lasting impact on the Bears. But the injuries to Darnell Mooney, Eddie Jackson, and others look like they will at least have some kind of lingering impact. So we'll look at what the future could hold after those injuries and how this natural grass versus artificial turf debate plays into all this at MetLife Stadium next on Locked On Bears. The Locked On Bears podcast is brought to you by Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. Browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the United States, the UK, Canada, and Australia. You can book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. You can get a classic or luxury car for a special event, birthday, or holiday. Find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget and just need to get from point A to point B. Or test drive that new electric vehicle you've had your eye on just to see how it might fit in your everyday life. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo.com. We knew the Chicago Bears would probably lose to the Jets, at least without Justin Fields in the lineup. And we know at this point that wins and losses are really only affecting draft position at this point. There's not really a bigger picture impact there. But what will affect this team moving forward is a devastating ankle injury for Darnell Mooney and a foot injury for Eddie Jackson that's still a little bit up in the air as far as how long-term of a situation that's going to be. Now, Matt Eberflus was very quick to say yesterday that Darnell Mooney's season is likely over, that he's likely going to have surgery, and assuming he does, which is expected, he'll be done for the season. But Eberflus was a little bit less sure on Eddie Jackson, who had the non-contact, what they're calling a foot injury, where Eberflus said they're not sure whether it's going to be season-ending and that they're planning to have an update available on Wednesday after Jackson meets with doctors. I've seen various Twitter doctors suggest that it didn't look to be as severe, perhaps, as you think when it's a non-contact injury and a guy is ruled, I think he was ruled doubtful to return to that game. But so it does seem like an encouraging sign, at least right away, that it's not an immediate, surgery out for season, the same way that Darnell Mooney's was. Either guy missing time is obviously going to be a big loss for their respective sides of the ball. Let's start with Darnell Mooney, since we know more certainty that he's going to miss time and likely the entire remainder of the season. You know he's the Bears' leading receiver. You know he's the fan favorite at wide receiver. And you know it's a position that's really lacking in consistent, proven talent and depth. I think we can at least be encouraged that against the Jets, you saw Chase Claypool get things rolling more so than we've seen. It was only two catches, but 51 yards, I think, was more than he had had in every other game this season combined. And it looked like, made a nice 50-50 ball catch. And there was another opportunity he had on one of those where he couldn't quite get the same separation. And I think he had another one working over the middle of the field where it's like you can see things starting to come together a little bit more for him as he's getting more and more comfortable in the playbook and the offense and knowing what his role and his responsibility are going to be, you know, down in and down out. We're slowly seeing his role grow in terms of playing time, especially, I think, forced in this game with Darnell Mooney's injury. He played a season high for the Bears, 38 snaps on offense, and actually played more snaps than any other wide receiver on the offense in this game because of Darnell Mooney's injury. Mooney got 18 snaps in before his injury, and so Claypool led the way for wide receivers with 38. That's still out of 57 total offensive plays. Quick math tells me that's about two-thirds off the top of my head of the snaps. So not like, you know, like Cole Kmet played every single snap on offense. Claypool was playing about two-thirds. Mooney was not playing every snap in the past, but, you know, upwards of 75-80% plus in most games. So he wasn't quite up to that level, but you saw them really spread the load around in this game after Mooney had been injured. Because Byron Pringle also stepped up into a bigger role and had what I think was also his most productive day as a Bears receiver so far. Still, I guess, still just two catches, and it wasn't in terms of yards, 12 yards, but he had the touchdown, which was, I think, the most impressive play he had made. He had a 22-yard catch in his first game with the Bears that technically gave him more yards in a game than this, but still, the biggest in terms of snap counts that he's been able to play, 31 snaps compared to Chase Claypool's 38. They were your two leading Bears receivers in terms of snaps played. And that's how you'd like to see things continue moving forward without Darnell Mooney in this Bears lineup. After them, it was actually Dante Pettis and Equanimee St. Brown who tied with 23 snaps each played. And then Velus Jones played about 12. We'd still like to see more from Velus Jones in terms of the snap count, get him more involved in this offense, but clearly I don't think the Bears coaching staff fully trusts him in that way, but I just don't feel like there's a lot more we need to see from the likes of Pettis or Equanimee St. Brown. We kind of know what they are. N'Keal Harry was a healthy scratch in this game, so maybe the Mooney injury leaves a spot for him to get more playing time in on offense there, because I think part of his inactivity was special teams-based, that Pettis and Equanimee St. Brown can do a little bit more in that regard than Harry, who has never been much of a special teams guy in his career. Special teams may also be impacted by Eddie Jackson's injury, because Jaquan Brisker's hurt right now, missed this game against the Jets. We'll see. Likely would think he could be back here against Green Bay, but if not Green Bay, then after the bye week would be the expectation there. And Dane Cruikshank went down with an injury too. So the Bears were down to the rookie seventh round pick Elijah Hicks and then DeAndre Houston Carson as their only two healthy active safeties in this game, with three guys at that position all injured. Perhaps, you know, if Brisker and Cruikshank both are back next week, that gives you four bodies there and you feel like you can kind of get by there. They also have the undrafted rookie free agent AJ Thomas on the practice squad, but you're always going to lose something when you lose Eddie Jackson. I mean, we know what type of player he is, and he's certainly been having a bounce back season this year. And you saw the coverage kind of fall apart a bit more down the stretch without Jackson really holding things down in the middle of the field. I mean, even that play that he got injured was a perfect example, right? That Kendall Vildor, they're in his own coverage there, so Vildor's trying to pass off that receiver to Jackson, who's supposed to kind of come down and make the tackle there, but he can't even get to him because of the foot injury, and then the receiver, you know, breaks away and runs all the way for a touchdown. It's kind of a culmination right there of just what Jackson's role was going to be on that play. Certainly have a decent amount of faith in a guy like DeAndre Houston Carson as a fill-in at safety. We've seen him play like a starting caliber safety before in this Bears defense, but you don't want him to be your best healthy safety if you can do something about it. And Hicks, for a seventh-round pick, you know, good on him for being ready and trying his best out there, but he certainly wasn't lighting the world on fire from that position or really scaring Mike White as an opposing quarterback in that situation. But at the very least, it's good experience for him if he's going to need to be called into action again due to injury here. But I would expect Houston Carson and Brisker will probably be your safeties next week if Jackson isn't able to go. And Cruikshank's probably going to stay ahead of Hicks on the depth chart to be really only that emergency option behind them, but also offer that special teams. Because, you know, if you start taking Cruikshank and Houston Carson on the field on defense, is that less energy they have to go out and be a four-phase special teams type player, and to even leave more importance for some of the other inactives to be special teams guys being active on the bottom of their depth charts at wide receiver, at cornerback, and at some of these other positions where special teams does matter when you're taking some of your primary special teams players away and having to use them more on defense. Eddie Jackson's non-contact injury was the latest major non-contact injury at MetLife Stadium this season, where a lot of players have pointed to it being treacherous for them. The NFL Players Association opened an investigation of this, and we'll kind of look at how that artificial turf compares to what the Bears have at Soldier Field and all the complaints they've had about that, and how that plays into this bigger injury situation next on Locked On Bears. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a new slate of football podcasts that we're sure you're going to love. Find the new Block Forever podcast now wherever you get your podcasts. Block Forever is a brand new podcast from former NFL All-Pro offensive lineman Ryan Khalil and Audible. Khalil takes the conversation about football to the next level. He gives the football fans an insider's look at the game through the eyes of the greatest players and personalities of all time. He sits down with star players, coaches, and former pros across the league to get real about what happens on the field and behind the scenes, inside the locker room, during team meetings, and back at the team hotel. You'll hear Christian McCaffrey talk all about his love-hate relationship with fantasy football, and you'll hear Juju Smith-Schuster give his most honest opinions on other players and positions in the league. New episodes of Block Forever will be recorded and released every week ahead of Thursday Night Football. Catch the full Block Forever series available anywhere you get your podcasts. Available everywhere now. Audible. Get in the game. There's a growing push around the NFL to move away from artificial turf fields because there's a belief, and now what I think is a growing mountain of evidence, or at least one side is presenting a growing mountain of evidence, that the artificial turf is leading to a greater rate of non-contact injuries for players that tend to be more serious and often season-ending. Now, I don't have the full information here, and I have seen some pushback that perhaps the injury situation there isn't as decisively anti-turf as players and the Players Association right now is pushing. But I think there is a general belief in the sports science community that artificial turf is generally a little bit harder on players physically. Doesn't necessarily equate to instant severe injury risk at all times, but that it's a bit less soft and giving than real natural grass. Of course, the idea here being well-maintained real natural grass, and also that not all types of artificial turf are created equal in this regard, that I think the NFL Players Association is specifically looking at what's called slit film turf fields, which include MetLife Stadium and also I think the Lions Stadium, the Viking Stadium, the Saints, the Colts, and I think the Bengals as well. I don't quote me on the full list of NFL team stadiums here, but I thought it's an interesting comparison point now that the Chicago Bears have been brought into it with the Eddie Jackson injury in particular, compared to all the complaints we've heard over the years of the Soldier Field turf, which of course is natural grass, just not always well-maintained natural grass. Of course, the argument in favor of the artificial turf, first and foremost, is that it's a lot easier to maintain. I mean, you don't have to water it, you don't have to mow it in all the same ways, right? I mean, there's small maintenance things you do in terms of the rubber pellets and stuff that you have in there, and you can kind of rake it around a little bit, but you kind of install it and forget about it for quite some time. And there's also a notion that it perhaps makes the players slightly faster because it's got a little bit more of that firmness to it. And I think what it comes down to with the non-contact injury situation is a similar dynamic. I think it's a kinetic energy issue. And I'm not a physicist. I'm not an exercise scientist. I certainly don't consider myself an expert on all of these topics, but I feel like I've amassed somewhat of an understanding of how this works in relation to the non-contact injury situation here. That when you think about it, when you have this artificial turf, it's essentially installed on top of an otherwise hard surface, I'm assuming concrete underneath, and there's not as much give when you get to the concrete. To try and mitigate that, you know, they put a lot of those rubber pellets in there, and those are able to absorb a lot of the energy when you step down and push your weight on it. You know, it can absorb some of that, and of course then like push it back at you and give you almost like that little slight amount of spring. And I really am interested by this because over the weekend I was at a college level football practice facility that uses this same slit film turf fields. And I noticed when I was standing on the turf that had been painted white for the lines and the numbers, you know, you have those little black rubber pellets in there. And when you step and press down, it happens everywhere, but especially where it's painted white, it's the most notable, where you have the black contrasting the white of the paint and the black of the rubber pellets. When you step down and then lift your foot up off of the turf, you see the rubber pellets jump. And not only jump immediately after you lift up your foot, but there's like a residual second and third jump that like they bounce and then they bounce again as the energy transfers back and forth two or three times, to where when you look down, if you're not familiar with the rubber pellets in there, it looks almost like fleas or small bugs are dancing on the turf for a good second or two after you've already released your foot and your energy from that turf. And it sort of registered to me in my brain then, as you watch players go down with non-contact injuries here, that as someone like Eddie Jackson steps perhaps incorrectly or awkwardly or whatever happens to cause the non-contact injury, we're going to use Jackson as an example here, but it would work the same for a knee injury or something like that. When you step and put your body weight down into the turf, it's the law of conservation of energy. I think it's one of Isaac Newton's physics laws that, of course, like energy doesn't go away, it just transfers from one place to the other. So as you put your weight down, of course, it pushes into the ground and then pushes back to propel you forward off of that ground. But I think what happens is the difference between natural grass and artificial turf is that when you push down on natural grass, some of that force is being absorbed by the dirt and the ground, that it has more of that natural give to it, that it can just absorb some of that. That's where some of the energy goes. A small part of the energy, but some of the energy. Whereas the concrete underneath the artificial turf does not have that give and does not have that same absorption. So when you put your step down, say perhaps awkwardly or at a weird angle for somebody like Jackson or another non-contact injury, that energy still has to go somewhere as it comes back up from the turf through your body. And I think that's where it ultimately stresses a muscle like that in a way that can cause damage, whether it's, you know, the energy going right into an ACL tearing or something in the foot like we're seeing with Eddie Jackson. Like, I think that's what happens, is the energy transfer can't be absorbed by the ground and it has to go somewhere. And if you're already putting some of that foot or leg energy in an awkward position, it can't just be absorbed by the ground. It has to go into the leg. That's not to say that non-contact injuries don't happen on grass. Like, of course, it can happen anywhere, and some of it's just luck. I think a lot of it is just luck. But my theory is that the less forgiving ground of the artificial turf can accentuate more of that energy and that force to go to the more fragile parts of the foot or the lower body there that can cause some of those non-contact injuries. And especially just over time, running on that type of turf, because there's less absorption with every step, more of that wears on your joints, your bones, your ligaments, your muscles, etc. And I think that that's where you collectively get into these complaints about these styles of turf stadiums. And that well-maintained grass and dirt tends to just be a little bit easier on the body as a result. It's worth remembering that Darnell Mooney's injury was a player rolling up on him, and that injuries do happen on grass all the time, and that replacing all artificial turf with grass probably isn't going to drastically cut down on the injuries you see in the NFL, but if it could make some impact on non-contact injuries, certainly the NFL has enough money to be able to do something about it. And maybe it can help you feel a little bit better about the Bears' turf at Soldier Field, especially now that Matt Eberflus has come in and replaced it with the new Bermuda grass instead of the Kentucky bluegrass that they had been using before. And outside of the monsoon we saw in week one against the San Francisco 49ers, it seems like the turf at Soldier Field has been better this season. And it also seems to me like historically, when there have been complaints about Soldier Field, like the mud and the crappy grass has made players slip and fall and has limited their ability to be as effective of football players as they possibly can. But I'm not sure that we've seen a drastic amount of injuries directly related to the Bears' turf at Soldier Field not being very good. I haven't seen overwhelming data on that. Maybe I'm misremembering or not thinking of specific injuries that you could directly relate to that grass. But I think of what I was talking about earlier, where if you slip under that dirt, like, at least you're not having that force going right into your knee or ankle or foot or whatever. That force, you know, when the dirt just gets kicked up and the grass comes up in the air, like, that's where the energy and the force is going. It's still being conserved. It's just not going directly into your ligaments and muscles and joints. And so I think that's comparatively a little bit better for the player's health than what we're seeing with these artificial turf fields. I think that's the most we've ever talked about artificial turf and turf in general on the Locked On Bears podcast. I know we've had brief discussions and rants about the poor quality of playing surface over the years, but a little bit of a different style of conversation today, but relevant for the Bears with the Eddie Jackson injury in particular, and something we're seeing across the league, that's especially with MetLife Stadium, but now bringing the Bears into the mix as the latest victims to the injury bug there. You can be sure we'll focus a bit more on direct football X's and O's the rest of the week and moving forward here on the Locked On Bears podcast. So make sure you hit that subscribe button to keep up with all of our daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. Thanks for sticking through as I've done my best to sound as less sick as possible, although I don't know that I can hide it all that well, but I've certainly paused my recordings every time I've needed to cough, clear my throat, or blow my nose here, so I hope it hasn't been too disruptive or distracting for you. I've been trying to keep the energy up as best as I can, but I know it won't sound quite as vibrant as I might in a fully healthy podcast. So I, again, appreciate you kind of sticking with it with me here and still tuning in for your daily Bears news and analysis. I can tell by where I'm at in the cold recovery process that I will not be 100% tomorrow either. Still going to be another couple of days here before you hear more of a fully normal sounding Locked On Bears podcast, but I hope you'll still tune back in tomorrow. I hope you'll keep making Locked On Bears your first listen each and every day. And I hope that you'll come back for your next opportunity to bear down.